Hello and welcome to The Exit presented by Flippa. This is a 30-minute podcast featuring amazing entrepreneurs who have been there and they have done it. The Exit talks to operators who have bought and sold businesses of all different sizes. You'll learn how they did it, why they did it, and get exposure to the world of exits. It's a world occupied by a small few, but accessible to many. And on this episode, I sit down with Stephanie Breedlove. She's currently a co-founder of Breedlove Capital. She's an incredible entrepreneur. She sold her company to Care.com, and she walks through how HomePay was created from scratch with her and her husband, and going through the grind, absolute grind, for the first couple of years before even getting a paycheck out of the company, and really focusing on full support of tax and payroll for these household-oriented care industry professionals. So it's a really fantastic story about how she started, and really great to learn how they grew the team and the emphasis on really focusing on the key performance indicators. She talks about the three that they monitor the closest, and retention being the top and most important, that I have always really tried to emphasize in any business venture that I'm in. And I always love learning about other people's KPIs and seeing that retention was her number one tracked metric for HomePay. It's a really phenomenal story for you guys to listen. So definitely stick around through the entire interview here for all of the amazing knowledge that Stephanie drops for this interview. And without further ado, let's jump right into the interview here on The Exit with Stephanie Breedlove. All right, guys, today I am joined with Stephanie Breedlove, the co-founder of Breedlove Capital. How are you doing today, Stephanie?
I'm great, Steve. How are you? And thanks for having me on.
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited to dig in here. So before we get in to your exit and that story and unpacking that, let's talk a little bit about your background and how you got into business.
Absolutely. I'm 56, so I've had a long career. I'm not in the early stage of my career and have the wisdom that goes with it. And to go all the way back to the beginning, I have a degree in finance and an MBA, and I left right out of graduate school into corporate America and went to work for Accenture in the late 1980s. And, you know, really was just not knowing who I wanted to be when I grew up. Early stages for women really trying to climb the corporate ladder. So there was a lot of unknowns in front of me. So I had no idea that I really wanted to be an entrepreneur and that it would be a good fit for me. Some people know in college or even in their first job that they're just earning their stripes so they can start something. And I did not have that at all. And the idea grew out of personal experience. I have two sons who are 17 months apart, who were both born while I was at Accenture without a maternity leave policy and had to navigate that road all those years ago. And we hired a full-time nanny to be our third parent. And an idea began to grow that maybe we could start a business in the in-home care industry, helping with payroll, taxes, benefits, legal consultation for people who hired nannies in elder care. And that's where the idea sprung from personal experience. In 1992, we built a little test and launched in three states with some cobbled together software and spreadsheets. And in 1995, I took the leap as the first full-time co-founder of Breedlove & Associates, which is today called HomePay by Care.com, to try to scale the company national. And I have never looked back. I've been in the entrepreneurial space now for almost 30 years. And I got to figure out who I wanted to be when I grew up.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I love time and time again the stories of entrepreneurs at a young age. It is confusing. You're kind of being taught one thing in school, and it can kind of feel like you're a bit of an outsider at first because you just want to solve problems and address all these problems that you're seeing around you. And it just feels like you're not doing something right. And it's always exciting when that clicks. And sometimes it's just, you know, later on in careers that it clicks. But that's really cool that you got a chance to, you know, experience that and click into addressing this pretty major problem of helping these in-home care people. So What was it like? You started with a couple co-founders. How big was the team and how fast did you grow it?
So our story is not what you read about in the media. The media loves to sort of glorify, I started something in my garage and 3 years later, I sold it for $1 billion. It was a 20-year journey and it took very measured steps. So my husband is actually my co-founder. There are two co-founders. But I took the leap first because in 1995, the funding ecosystem doesn't look like it does today. There were barely angel investors. There was barely venture capital. We actually were bootstrap entrepreneurs. We had about $60,000 in the bank and we drew it down. And I took the leap first. And in the first year, it was just me. In the first 3 years, it was me and one other person. And then as the company began to break even, to reach that break even point, then we began to grow from there. And it actually took about 3.5 years to start to get even close to that break even point. I didn't draw a paycheck for the first 27 months. And I was able to do so because I could lean on a spouse's salary. And my husband was burning the midnight oil about 10 hours a week behind the scenes. So once we sort of broke even, then we just started taking those pace steps that seems very logical. It wasn't this big explosion. We went to a team of five and then we crossed that $1 million mark in revenue and we began to form departments and then we grew to 15 people and then 25 people and then 30 people and then on from there. And that process, took over 15 years and lots of changes in the way we functioned and the way we hired and the way we built a team. And it didn't happen overnight.
Hey guys, Steve here, and taking a quick pause from the interview. I know that selling a business can feel unattainable and just out of reach for everybody, but it's definitely something that is very reachable for people that are listening to this podcast with Flippa. And I've mentioned that this show is presented by Flippa. They have over 3 million users on their platform who are looking to acquire everything from content sites to e-commerce stores to SaaS platforms or even mobile applications. So if you're curious and want to know more about what your business is worth, head to flippa.com/theexit for free valuations on your business. It takes a couple minutes to literally go through and you can just go through the whole process without committing to anything at all. So once again, flippa.com/theexit, check it out, get evaluation on your business without any commitments and just see exactly what your valuation of your business is worth. So let's dive into the interview. Yeah, it's definitely kind of a really surreal moment when you start supporting others, when you start bringing in employees, especially those first, 5, 10 people, having them relying on you, that feeling is both good and scary all at the same time. And I think that everybody out there listening, it's always important. And Stephanie mentioned that it can grow relatively quickly, but you can also control that growth. And feeling that scary feeling of putting the foot on the gas is a fun feeling and an exhilarating one, and ultimately, the end goal is hopefully something like what Stephanie goes through. And we can get into that now in terms of how you guys grew, how big the team was by the time the exit happened. And let's talk about how you came across the acquiring company.
Yeah. And I will jump in first with your comment around the team, since we were talking about, the growth. We were in an emerging industry. And so we probably could have been larger with more money faster at any given time. On the flip side, I will say that the in-home care industry, is not an industry, in which, for example, that, the tech space has millions of people engaging in a particular product and you have to meet that growth. We were largely working to create the growth. So, sometimes we were ready to grow faster than the industry was allowing us to. So I have to make that comment. But I will say this from a team point of view. You use the word relying on you. And I just want to mention two things for those who are listening and watching out there. The first is that when you hire someone, I have always had this philosophy, whether you're hiring your first person or your 100th person, you need to be hiring someone who potentially could take the next job above them. Hire to groom yourself out of a job. And if that's your overarching philosophy, then the people you hire will organically create some of that growth that we were just talking about. And the second philosophy that I've always had is that they are relying on you. They didn't show up on your doorstep as geniuses in your space and have already drunk your Kool-Aid and understand how to do their job at their best and to grow along with you. It's your job to help make that happen as their teammate. So the word delegation exists a lot in entrepreneurship, and delegation means setting up training programs and working alongside a person to help them be the best for themselves, the best for the department they're working in, the best for the company. And that's hard and arduous work. You know, if you want to bring someone in who's got this fantastic resume and just turn them loose, that's an abdicator. A delegator is someone who digs in at their side and works along with them. And that's how you grow a team. So I'll mention that part because you were talking about how do you grow the team and what's the work like and how do you do it such they're relying on you, but you're doing it in the right way. So I wanted to touch on that. But then you asked me about the how of the acquisition. I will say that we were approaching that $10 million mark in revenue, and you start to become attractive to the general world at about $10 million. So we were having a few phone calls of who are you and what are you all about? And may I want to partner with you, private equity firms, potential financial acquirers. We were acquired by Care.com, who is a strategic acquirer. And soup to nuts from beginning to end was 6 months almost to the day. And it really started in a purposeful but human way. The CEO of Care.com was Sheila Marcello at the time. She was the founder. And she simply just picked up the phone and said, we play in the same industry. We had a marketing relationship in which we were providing content for their website, for their marketplace. And she just picked up the phone and said, I just want to know who you are. I've heard good things about you in the industry. We have this marketing relationship. We are VC backed. We think our next growth strategy might be an acquisition. And I just want to know who you are and where you come from and what you're all about. And we probably spent 6 weeks just on the phone talking to each other as two co-founders, as two owner operators, as two experts in the space, and often as two women.
Nice. Just picked up the phone, gave you a call. That's fantastic. But that initial partnership, though, that marketing partnership, that foot in the door that you guys had, really led to that phone call. And I love digging in.
Absolutely.
And seeing that. And you guys had developed that over the course of a couple of years, or how long were you guys in a relationship?
Yeah, like that's probably a good mark. It was probably between one and 2 years. And I had not actually been involved in the relationship. It was more at our lower marketing team level, in which, you know, on a monthly basis, we were providing content that they would post up on their website. But that brought that awareness all the way up to the board level.
Wow. Yeah, I love how that can happen. Somebody just writing content on your team, like you said, in the lower tier of a marketing department, can ultimately lead to something as huge as as the Care.com acquisition.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
So in terms of the acquisition itself, how long did it take? And did the entire team transition to the headquarters? What was the deal in terms of how the transition would take place?
Okay, so I'll talk briefly about the 6 months that it took to get to the deal, and then what happened, you know, in the days and months following. So I mentioned that it started with really just phone calls, and you know, and to be honest, it wasn't a business conversation, except to sort of tell the history of how each of us had worked to grow our companies. And I think largely because they were looking for fit. We were going to be their first large acquisition, and they were looking for fit. And when we checked that box of kind of seeing the industry and the way you grow a business through the same lens, then it sort of became go time. And what happened from there is we went from getting to know each other to flipping the switch of let's start having serious conversations about whether or not we want to join forces and whether or not, you know, Breedlove and Associates is ready and willing and care.com is ready and willing to make an acquisition happen. So we went from getting to know each other to let's do a deal. Mm-hmm. And we signed NDAs and we started sharing information. And I will say to the listeners out there, if you think that an exit is in your future or you'd like for it to be in the forthcoming years, do the work to be really organized, documented, historical about your information. Because when someone asks for your operational information, your financial information, and you're cobbling things together, it doesn't bode well in the negotiation process. So we were a very buttoned up company. We had made sure that we were ready for this kind of a next. And we started sharing information. And from there, we actually started to talk pretty quickly about, you know, the total consideration of what the range was at care.com was willing to offer and what the range was that we were willing to accept. And we came to an impasse within probably about 2.5 months. And I will say this, that unless an exit is the only thing on your list, then it's like any other large financial transaction. I compare it sort of to buying a house. You have to be willing to walk away because if the win isn't there and this isn't your only mission in life to exit, then you're better off doing something else. And we were not close enough in range, and we were going to pay a lot of money to lawyers and accountants to argue over getting into the right range. And I didn't feel that that was a good use of my time and distraction from growing my company. So we agreed that we liked each other's story, but we were too far apart, and I walked away. And about 6 weeks later, Sheila called back and said, "We think we can buy your story. We think you can be, we can get into your range, and let's keep this negotiation going." So we had about a 6 week gap. And from that point, it was go time. We set up the data rooms. We connected with their CFO, their CTO, their CMO. We put together our team of lawyers and accountants. And I led the negotiation from a human point of view. I will say there are a lot of M&A experts. There are a lot of brokers out there. And you feel like as a founder that negotiating acquisitions isn't your forte, and it's not. But no one knows your business better than you do. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend to any founder who should know that they are not experts at negotiating acquisitions, that if they put a team together, folks who can speak the legalese and mitigate the risk financially, that you should go to work at the lead, because no one knows your business better than you do. And at the end of the day, it's not really about, you know, legal speak and high finance. It's about two companies coming together in the right way. And there's a lot of basic operation and human conversation around that. Hmm. So we marched forward with myself and my husband, who was the bad cop. We played good cop, bad cop a little bit in the background. We marched forward serious about making the deal go, which means that, you know, we had to give a tremendous amount of our time over about a 3 or 4 month period. And our executive team did not know. We opted not to tell them until the deal was going to go through. And the deal went through. We took 50% in cash and 50% in stock. They were hoping to go public in the next couple of years. So we took the risk that they would go public and we would be a valuable part of the story. And we would actually either break even, lose a little at best, you know, or have a stock value slightly higher than, you know, our total consideration. And we ended up just slightly above, which is a great story. So we inked the deal, and I just said we didn't tell our team until we knew the deal was going to go through about a couple weeks before signing. And there's lots of debate in the marketplace today about whether or not you should bring your team along the ride with you or not. And we opted not to, mostly for the company. If the deal didn't go through, I didn't want to see, you know, our clients and our employees suffer because the people who were running the company were distracted by something that didn't come to fruition. Mm-hmm. So on the flip side, we had to do the hard work to shock a group of our management team to say, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is why it's going to be successful for the company and for you. And then we had to go to work to bring them up over the hump 2 weeks before signing the deal. And that's a little bit of a shock. And we actually set up one-on-ones with every management team member multiple times a week for as many weeks as they needed it for us to give them comfort and to put a plan together. And so what happened then, you have to pick when you're negotiating what your priorities are. You can't have everything. You have to compromise. You have to win on certain things that are vital to you, and you have to give on certain things that aren't quite as vital. And one that was vital to us was to leave the company intact in Austin, Texas. The headquarters of Care.com at the time was Boston. It's now in Austin. Both companies are there together. And that was one tenant in the negotiation that we won. So we stayed in Austin. The two founders stayed for 2 years with a 2-year earnout to help shepherd the larger company going public, the transition, and, you know, really creating what we hoped would be called just the Austin office of Care.com. So there was a lot of work to do to join forces with another company, but the team stayed completely intact. And as a matter of fact, within 3 or 4 months of acquisition, we moved from 12,000 square feet of space to 27,000 square feet of space in anticipation of huge growth in Austin, which was a real uplifting experience for the company and our team.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. I love that you had the actual geography in the deal that you wanted it to be in Austin. I think that's really unique to make sure that the employees were very, very much taken care of. I like that because that's very much aligned and making sure that all of your executives and management and everybody are taken care of throughout the transaction. Because it can be very scary for people on the team that hear something like, hey, we're selling the business. It can be very chaotic at times. So that's really good to hear that you had that geographic kind of added into the agreement there. So one of the things that I'm always really fascinated by is KPIs or key performance indicators that people track. And a lot of people out there, maybe young entrepreneurs that are just getting started, maybe they're thinking about selling their business. When you were operating, let's say early days all the way to the later days when you were about to sell the business, what were some of the things that you were tracking in your business specifically that maybe they don't have to be universally, you know, that everybody can track because everybody's business is different, but right. What were you guys specifically tracking?
Okay. Well, I will say that tracking is never overrated. It's even worth tracking something that becomes kind of useless and not worth the time. So we were big at tracking a lot, but at a high level in an overarching way, we had 3 KPIs. Really, we had one huge KPI and the other two fell underneath that I have to say we tracked from the day of inception, until the day of acquisition. And I'm sure they are still using the same ones. And the number one at all costs is not as financial as you would think. It's client retention. If you're fortunate to have recurring revenue from a client base, because that is just such a golden business model, which we did. We had recurring revenue. Each client represents average recurring revenue, and they're the most cost-effective way to grow a company if you can retain a client. And if you're retaining a client, then you know that you're making all the right decisions around value. I mean, down to, are you bringing value in some way to their daily life that they feel like they can't go without you? And if you don't have recurring revenue, every business has client retention. It's repeat sales. If it's you want someone to ensure that they buy every month on their own, or if you're a large ticket item, if they buy that once, they're going to buy it again. For example, car sales. So a client retention is common to every business, just how you define it. And I'll give you an example of why this was so important to us and kind of what it drove in our industry, in the payroll and tax industry, and our particular competitors in the in-home care space. Client retention averaged about 18 to 24 months. Ours averaged about 42 months. So the number one KPI is client retention. As a matter of fact, our first client stayed 20 years. The second two I mentioned, there were other two. Yeah, 20 years from from inception when he had babies and had a nanny to household management to personal assistant by the time the kids were gone. Hmm. We evolved with him. We had enough value in his daily life for him to keep us. The other two, though, follow along. One is growth, year-over-year growth. I believe in longer term growth tracking so you can give your strategies time to play out, success or failure. And the second is profitability. I mentioned we were a bootstrap company, so we had to grow out of profitability. And those two are often in conflict with each other. It takes money to grow, yet profitability is a true testament of stability of your company. And the balance between those two, I think, is where good decisions get made.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. So the finale question I like to ask everybody is, knowing what you know now, what would you tell Stephanie 10 years ago?
Oh, I think the main thing I would say, which everyone knows this and it may sound a little cliche, is don't sweat the small stuff. Mm-hmm. Stay focused on the big picture, the long term. The who you want to be and where you want to go personally and professionally over a long period of time. You know, if you are an entrepreneur and you have a family, which I did, my children were toddlers when I took the leap. So I was constantly stressing this balance between doing right by my employees and my company and my children and my family. And I realize now, if I look back, if I feel like I had a good overall compass and was making good overall decisions, and over time, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, could see the results, then just march to that drummer, not the one in the moment of crisis. So I think my cliche recommendation is don't sweat the small stuff.
Got it. Got it. Well said. So those are all the questions I have for you. What is Breedlove Capital? What are you guys focusing on? And where can people go and learn more?
Happy to share. So Breedlove Capital is my latest endeavor. We've only been in business for a couple of years. I had a gap when we sold the company and I jumped full force into supporting women in entrepreneurship. And just wanted to mention that I have a book on the market. It's been fortunate enough to be an Amazon bestseller called All In. And it's about the entrepreneurial journey, just both professionally and personally. And I'm mentioning that because my publisher is allowing me to do a book giveaway right now. And if anybody would like a free signed copy of the book, just email me at stephaniebreedlove@gmail.com. That's first name, last name. stephaniebreedlove@gmail.com with your name and address, and my team will send you a copy. From that, I've been doing a lot of mentoring and investing in the startup space, and that led my husband and I to Breedlove Capital. Breedlove Capital is a family office and an investment firm in which we've taken our good fortune from the acquisition, and we are primarily focused on investing in the entrepreneurial space, a little bit in the startup world, mostly in kind of mid-stage businesses starting to scale. And we are also investing in entrepreneurship through acquisition. Entrepreneurship isn't just startup. And we are in the space of working with brokers and vetting and doing due diligence on the acquisition of companies between 3 and 9 million in revenue, kind of a smaller, a lower space than most private equity firms focus on, who've got founders who have the ability to take the business to the next scale, but maybe don't have the mentorship or the funding. So entrepreneurship through investment and acquisition. And you can find me personally on LinkedIn.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Stephanie. Wherever you guys are listening to this on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud, all the links that Stephanie mentioned will be in the show notes. Once again, thank you, Stephanie, for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.